are going to have Peter M. And I'll just turn it over to Peter M. You can explain it.
Thank you. Everybody, I'm Peter. I'm a recovered alcoholic. Grateful to be alive and sober and at a sacred place called Alcoholics Anonymous. And grateful to be anywhere today, sober and in the sunlight of the Spirit, contrary to where it used to be. I had an AA birthday last week, and I could not help but reflect on where I had been. It was, in fact, in the last few years, it's the most reflection I was moved to do as to where I had been and where this power moved me to. It was an ugly scene for me in 1988, living in a back of hallways and panhandling for a drink and dying of untreated alcoholism and still trying to figure a way out. And my contact with a higher power back then was, I just wish he would take me and I could go home to him and get rid of this and save everyone a lot of grief. And death looked like a good way to go at the time, and he had other plans for me, and I'm really grateful for that. Very grateful for this gift of sobriety and continuing to give it back to others as God sees fit and gives me the power to do so. My experience has proven to me when we stop passing this message, the message in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, to others, we have no Alcoholics Anonymous as a fellowship as we know it. And the question to ask is, how many meetings do we go to when this message is not being passed on, but rather we hear bad group therapy, column two meetings, and a newcomer walks out with no solution on how to recover from alcoholism. So I have a responsibility, and God gives me the power to carry out that responsibility when I show up to the altar with a spirit of willingness. And what brought me to a place of willingness was circumstances. How do I help others? Teachers are put in my path. I wake up, I recover, and go back into the sordid spots in Alcoholics Anonymous or the pockets of enthusiasm and wait at the door and see who's available. I mean, that's why I'm here. I'm really grateful to do workshops like this. I get to do a lot of these things. But my primary purpose here after staying sober is to help another drunk. This is the fun stuff we get to do. But it's about being in the trenches and working with others, having people come to your house, talking to them on the phone, or going getting one at midnight if you have to. Very grateful to this group for inviting me back again and allowing me to do this, and for Bill for taping and doing all the hard work he does. My experience has proven to me that simply your spirit has extended an invitation to mine. And when that happens, we commence shoulder to shoulder upon a common journey. My life is not my own anymore. My life is one of invitation. I get invited to go places. I get invited to family. I get invited to gatherings. I get invited to Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't volunteer, hey, Chris, pick me to go speak. That's arrogant. And I speak for myself. My life is one of invitation. And God speaks through group conscious, and I was asked back here, and I'm very grateful for that. We get to commence shoulder to shoulder upon a common journey when we follow the rules in a big book, when we follow the suggestions in a big book, when we walk in the sunlight of the Spirit. We get to experience something called bliss. And for each one of us, that's different, but it's bliss nonetheless, and that word even falls short because we're experiencing the glory of God, which this work allows us to do. We get to, by doing this work, we get to understand the difference between being attached to happiness and experiencing inner peace. And there's a big difference. When I was in here, I was looking for happiness. She'll make me happy. That'll make me happy. The money will make me happy. And that's good for the 100-yard sprinter, but not for the long-distance runner, which is what we need to be in here. Happiness is really predicated on my perceptions of things being good. And I'm constantly looking to feel happy, needing, wanting, gotta feel happy. And what this work does is dismantle all of that, levels me and builds me up again where I get to experience God or inner peace. And regardless of what's going on out there, whether I feel happy or sad, whether I feel joy or sorrow, There's something going on in here that allows me to move from moment to moment to moment to moment. Everything's okay, accepting what is. And my journey reflects that. Because I go from point A to point B, and how am I being in my journey? What this work allows me to do is experience God. Because some of us may want to be, you know, own a company. I know a lot of us, when we get in here, we all want to be counselors. We want to go become alcoholic counselors and cure everybody. That's how I was at the beginning. And that was a rude awakening. But we have these things we're going to. We want to become. And some of us get there. And we look back and we cause a ton of wreckage in trying to get there. Because of self-seeking, manipulation, character assassination, gossiping on the way to get to our goal. And some of us walk with this power. And whether we achieve those goals or not, at the end of the day, we put our head on a pillow and all's okay. So I don't look to reach outer poverty, outer riches, and inner poverty. I look to experience God. I know people in Alcoholics Anonymous who have made lots of money, have done great things, never visited this work, and they got there by doing a lot of things that don't really reflect someone in Alcoholics Anonymous. I just want to experience this power, and this book allows me to do that. So regardless, again, of what's going on in my external world, which is not the remedy for an internal condition called alcoholism, I'm okay. We get to experience God. Last week there was a question about me referring to step two as the solution. And I've said it a million times from a podium that the work we do in here in Alcoholics Anonymous, all the work we get to do in Alcoholics Anonymous, all the step work, all the service, all the fellowshipping, are pointers to experience God. They're pointers to God. But what I meant specifically was step two talks about this power taking me, this arrival point, I will get to a place of wholeness of mind, sanity, where I'm no longer thinking about a drink because I'm in the sunlight of spirit, and that's where we're headed for. And I hope that clears things up for a few. And I will always say that, step two shows me a solution, that God, His infinite mercy, will take me to a place of wholeness of mind. I can't will that self on my own. I just follow a few simple rules in this book. I just want to go back to page 62 for a minute, if we can just shoot there for a second. See, some of us may be experiencing freedom right now. And the question we want to ask is, do I want to get freer? And do I think I can take me past where I currently am? Or do I need to seek this power? And those of us who are experiencing any sort of bondage in any area of our life, this book gets to meet us where we currently are, and we can get past that if we experience this power. Because if not, what I'm trying to use is me to overcome me. I'm trying to use self to get past self. And I'll read inspirational books, and I'll go to retreats, and I'll listen to motivational speakers, and I'll do a lot of those things, and it'll feel good for a few days, and then I'll bottom out again. But if I get to experience God, I'm free. And my book will allow me to do that. Page 62 says, selfishness and self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. And you could underline the word root. If you could imagine this tree of illness called alcoholism, Bill says his newfound friend had to take away his defects of character, root and branch. They use the word stem in our book. We have this tree of illness, and a lot of contemporary AA, they're simply, you know, trimming the leaves, trimming the branches a little bit. And what happens? Everything grows back. And our book is talking about this drastic and revolutionary proposal where we're getting everything ripped out, roots and all, and placed in new soil. Our roots grass, new soil. A book is really clear on what they're doing for us. It's drastic. It's revolutionary. And for some of us, incredibly painful going through the archway, because what we get to do in step four is look at self, hold a mirror up to self for the very first time. For some of us, the very first time. And who cares to do that? It's easier for me to point at you for my troubles. But my book is clear again when it says the troubles arise out of ourselves. It's an internal condition, regardless of what's going on out there, regardless of who did what to me. My book says the troubles arise out of me. Troubles were of my own making. That's why step four says, well, let's disregard what they did entirely. Let's hold a mirror up to you, Pete, and see where you fell short. How you lived with this resentment when you had an opportunity not to. How you nursed a grudge for 20 or 30 years. How you continued to hate people. How you continued to character assassinate and gossip because you felt justified in so doing. All stuff, a great, great prescription to get drunk again. See, the thing about resentment, our book says the great reality is deep down within, right? In chapter 2, Agnostics. The great reality, God, is deep down within you, 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 the whole room. I had 5 spiral notebooks on my first time sitting down and writing inventory of resentments. My sponsor almost bailed on me when he saw that. Get somebody else. Resentment after resentment after resentment after resentment. The great reality is deep down within. Which means I'm blocked from you. Which means I'm blocked from you. Which means I'm blocked from you. Times that by 200 or 300. Completely blocked from this power. Add to that belief systems. Contempt. A sex life that was distorted with perceptions and belief systems. Fears that own me. I got to see how fear and sex walk hand in hand. I never knew that. Belief systems attached to fear. My entire third column attached to fear. I got to see all of this stuff. Page 62. Selfishness and self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. We step on others, column 1, they retaliate. We get angry with them, column 2. Sometimes they hurt us and seemingly without provocation, without being provoked. But we invariably find that sometime in the past, I made a decision based on me, which later placed me in a position to be hurt. Our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. And if it wasn't, that means I'd have to go around changing every one, rather than turning to this power and let him build me the way he sees fit. My book tells me they arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of the selfishness. We must, or it kills us, and God makes that possible. And over again, my book is going to refer to experiencing the death of self, which 4 through 9 will do. And God is the one who's going to do that. I can't do that on my own other than suiting up and showing up to this work. Successful living is daily dying. So the question I have to kick out, when I first heard it, I thought it was pretty drastic, and to tell you the truth, I was a little taken back by the question, but how true is this question? We show up to a sponsor's doorstep, we show up to a workshop like this. Aren't we looking to die? Someone told me that. You're here because you want to die. I said, no, I'm in an AI, I want to live. No, you want to experience death. Not the physical death, but the death of self. We show up to a sponsor, a newcomer. I can't take it anymore. I got to do something. Can you help me? What they want to do is experience the death of all the manifestations that are killing them. We show up to a workshop, some of us just to acquire more knowledge, some of us maybe to have a new experience, and some of us to get something to get us past where we currently are, because where we currently are is a little too uncomfortable. The heat's on us again. We're experiencing page 52, and that's got to go. Well, guess what? We want to experience the death of self once again. That's a great thing, by the way, as drastic as that sounds. And I know every time I show up to my sponsors, okay, I feel like I need to go through this work again. Take me through this work again. And I know intellectually what it's going to involve. New third step, house cleaning, current amends, new disciplines. And I know it's probably going to make me uncomfortable, but why not give that to my spirit? Why not wake up once again? rather than staying stuck where we are. If it felt so good the first time and the second time and the third time on the other side of the archway, why would I deny myself that? So I continue to rework this stuff. How many of us ate yesterday? Then how many of us ate today also? Why did I need to eat today if I ate yesterday? Well, because we got hungry. And if we continue not to eat, we'll get sick and then we'll die. And so my sponsor asked me a question. If you did the work a year ago, 2 years ago, 5 years ago, why not continue to do the work and nourish your spirit, nourish the soul? And so I reworked the steps regularly. On the bottom of page 62, it says, this is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decide that hereafter in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. And if you could put on a sheet of paper, you don't have to do it now, but just see this on a sheet of paper, God and director at the top. A director tells the actors what to do. God's directing my life. It says, he is the principal, we are his agents. And on one side of the paper, I put principal. On the other side of the page, I put agent. Michael Jordan is the principal. He hires an agent to go out and represent him. Michael Jordan gives him the power to go out and represent him. God is the principal. He gives me the power to go out and represent him, gives us the power to go out and represent him, to carry the vision of his will into all my activities. Page 68 says, God will demonstrate through me what he can do. We have been given great power in Alcoholics Anonymous. It says, he is the father, we are the children. What does a father do? Provide his children with everything they need. He is the employer, I'm the worker for him. And I go do God's work. On page 63, it says, established on this footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves. I like it underlined, the words less and less. Less and less interest in ourselves, our little plans and designs, and more, underline the word more and more, please. We became interested in seeing what we can contribute to life. In one page, we're going from being consumed with self to being less consumed about me and more involved in what I can do for you. Tremendous promise based on how I came in here. My book is telling me it's going to be this way. And here's where many of us bail. After the third step, when a sponsor says, okay, we're going to do step four. And suddenly we think we need a new sponsor. Right? Because we got an idea of what it's going to look like. Right? All coming from the mind. We got an idea of what it's going to be like by listening to some of the comments. Or some of the contemporary AA meetings say, don't do that fourth step, you're going to get drunk, it's really a lot of work. And we fail to see the people who are living in the sunlight of the Spirit because of the work they did. Right? And we get attached to the outcome, what it's going to look like, what it's going to be like, and we get consumed with becoming this or that. Rather than just being with it and knowing that God's going to move me from moment to moment to moment in my fourth step. So some mechanics. We make a decision in step three, and next we launch out on the course of vigorous action, which means now. And that's on the bottom of page 63. Now, I remember doing a third step prayer at my sponsor, and I moved right into inventory. He didn't tell me, let's work the first three steps, do the AA walls. That's back in Brooklyn, they say that, do the AA walls. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. They forget to say 1, 2, 3, drunk, then 1, 2, 3, drunk. Right? Or do the step a year, or you're not ready for your fourth step. Get your life together, then do your fourth step, right? If I could have got my life together, I would stop drinking, not come to AA, and I would been a happy camper, but that never materialized for me. So after the third step, I launched onto a course of vigorous action, first part being a house cleaning. I had to search out the flaws in my makeup, not yours. So in the first column, we list the resentment. Interesting thing happened to me in just coming up with a first column. I was living in the streets, panhandling, living the way I was doing. I come into Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm living in this nice little studio apartment, and I'm given my fourth step, and going from living the way I was to the way I was in my fourth step. Suddenly, without prayer, I thought of, well, maybe I need to, it's before I write, I should really fix the place up a little bit. Right? I was sleeping among God knows what, and suddenly I'm worried about how the apartment's looking before I write this fourth step. And then what would happen, more self would get in the way, say, well, Pete, you know, it's going to be a long night because we're going to do a lot of writing tonight. You should eat. Right? And all those AAs make coffee, so let's make some coffee and eat. And then I got done doing that. Okay, I'm going to go write. We should digest our food a little bit and watch a little TV. And then I'm going to go write and I'd fall asleep. Or I'd get myself to the with a pen in my hand and a pad in front of me, and I'd start to write and say, well, he doesn't need to know about that. I was attached to the outcome of what it was going to look like, total self-reliance, total agnosticism. He may think less of me if I give him that one, and no one's going to know about my sex life. And quickly, I started to get sick. And I showed up to my sponsor one day, and I told him what was going on, and I'll clean up the language a bit. But he told me about my third step decision, that God was going to move me through this, and what happened to prayer before I write. So I would encourage anyone, everyone, to make prayer. My prayer was simple. Thank you, Father, for allowing me to be searching, fearless, and moral. What was my motive? Not to pick up a drink and go help others. That was as pure as I can be at that moment. That was good enough because God don't make two hard turns. But I had to get me out of the way and go to this power. My intent was good, but my actions lacked power. I couldn't pull this off on my own. And here's the neat thing. When we follow directions in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, with my fourth step, and I turn to this power to be searching, fearless, and moral, or whatever prayer you take to this power, and I show up with a spirit of willingness, when I get done, my fourth step is perfect. Perfect in spirit, isn't it? Why would God do anything less than perfect? And what I had to get was, I am not writing this. The pen is a spiritual translator. I'm showing up. I'm the instrument. And God's revealing this. And if you've ever done a fourth step thoroughly, besides it disturbing you, if you haven't gotten disturbed in your fourth step, you're not writing a fourth step. I'll tell you that up front. And we're not writing about all the wonderful things we did and the great people we are. I'm looking at causes and conditions, the things that are taking me back from to a drink. To helping the old lady across the street is a nice thing, but I don't have to write about that. My sponsor really don't care about that. You know why? Because he's convinced once I wake up, I'll do that automatically. But I'm getting down to things, causes and conditions, and it's not about good and bad. It's just things that are blocking me. Uncover, discover, and discard the obstacles in my path. This is work. In A Vision for You, they use the words patience, willingness, and labor. Labor is work. And so I make prayer. And that's what I had to do, make prayer, and little by slowly, I began to write. And I started writing, I went back through my life the first time through the work, and I start listing names, and it wasn't up for me to decide to, well, they're not that important. I don't need to write about this. The pen gave me the name, and I wrote. I did not deny the spirit. I couldn't even if I wanted to. And I followed directions on my fourth step, in spirit is perfect. Where do I think these resentments and causes are coming from? Do I think I'm the one delivering that? You know when you're writing an inventory and you go, wow, I forgot all about that. And stuff comes to you. That's coming from God. We turn to God to do this, and God says, okay, here's what's blocking you from experiencing me. And so anything, no matter, we may walk down some very sordid spots in our life, some very sordid moments in our life, some very uncomfortable moments in our life, as it ought to be. We're visiting places that we'd like to tuck away in some circumstances, some instances, correct? But God's going to walk me through it because He's the one revealing it to me. Like a father walking his child, walk with me. This is what's in the way. I'm going to get it out of the way for you. Here's the work to do it. God reveals to me over and over and over again. So whatever shows up on our fourth step, no matter how uncomfortable it is, it's coming from a loving creator because it's another obstacle that's blocking me from experiencing Him and being of service to Him. And trust me, when you start to hear fifth steps, you'll hear the same uncomfortability in the person reading back to you. And you know where they hit that little bit of a wall just by watching them. In the first column, I listed all my resentments. And in the second column, the reason why I was angry at the person in column one. There were times going through the work for the first time, I wrote down a name and says, well, I don't know if I have a resentment with this person. And I call up my sponsor and says, keep writing. And I got done with my first column, and the last two names that went in there were me and God. And I felt incredibly disloyal for putting down God's name in the first column. I thought the sky would open up and I would die. But God revealed that to me. You're angry with me. Let's talk about it. Right? And I didn't believe how angry I was at God. Resentment God took mom. Resentment God didn't fix mom. It went on and on and on and on. You know. And I start to write my causes. And I was told be very generous with paper. There's a lot of it. I was squeezing like 55 inventories on one loose leaf sheet, you know. And if we get to the third column, it talks about these seven areas. Pride, personal relationship, self-esteem, security, ambition, pocketbook, sex relations. Pride, how I think others see me. And what I got to do later on and later, going through the work the second, third, and fourth time, fifth time, was open up this third column. And if you're not doing that, that's okay. But this was just something for me. When our book says we considered it carefully, I get to consider my third column real carefully. Why? I get to see all the fear attached to those areas of self. Pride. No one should see me. No one should know about. My boss scolds me in front of my coworkers. Affects my third column. Pride. No one should see me getting scolded by my boss. You know, walk into a meeting and the sponsor confronts me on something in front of a group. No one should see that happen. Affects pride. Why? You will think less of me. What does that mean? I'll be alone. You won't like me. What does that mean? I'll experience abandonment. I'm going to die. Fear attached to pride. Personal relationships is another area in the third column. How I think this relationship should look. Have an argument with the husband or wife. He or she's in the first column. The reason why in the second column. Personal relationship. This relationship ought to look this way. And I'm attached to the way it should look, right? And it isn't looking that way right now. And somewhere I'm thinking, I'm listening to, well, this may be the fight to end all fights. That means I'll be alone. That means she's going to leave me. I'm not good enough. I'm abandoned. I'm alone. Die. Fear. It's all subtle. It's way back there. But when we get to uncover and discover, trust me, it's there. In different extremes. Different severity for some of us, but it's there. Self-esteem, how I see or feel about myself. Write out an inventory to high self-esteem. I'm a step worker. I'm a guru. You know, I sponsor people. I'm a spiritual person. Which sets me up for a huge expectation. Then how dare you, if I see myself this way, how dare you do what you did to me? Don't you know I'm a spiritual person? Don't you know I'm an AA guru? Don't you know I sponsor people? Don't you know I go to my religious community? How dare you do that to me? The high self-esteem is an open invitation for resentment. Right? The inflated self-esteem. Reverse the coin and it's, I deserve everything you give me because I'm not worth much anyway. I'm a loser. I'm no one. Sex relations, not only sex, but my ideas, my roles of how a woman ought to be and how a man ought to be. Get to look at belief systems just by examining that and how distorted they stall it. That was a wake-up call for me going through the work. How I still was holding on to belief systems, subtle as they were there. And guess what? That would determine how I would act towards women, how I would act towards men. Men, John Wayne, throw a punch first, ask questions later, walk through a wall, don't show them you're hurting, you know, all this stuff. And women ought to be this way. Trust me, all of that stuff is going to affect personal relationships with others. Because I never see someone as a child of God, but I see them as this generalization. So how could I be present with you? How could I appreciate you and your uniqueness when I have you in this category, men, women? security, what I need to be okay. They're not giving me what I need to be okay. I need, really comes down to, I need you to do exactly what I want you to do for me to be okay. How often do we show up to relationships? And relationships, you know, there's give and take, we compromise, we lean on each other, we support, we talk, we communicate, right? But beyond that, how often do we show up to a relationship demanding you give me what I know I lack? And when you don't, I get incredibly angry. You're all over my nightly inventory tonight. Right? Demanding you give me what I lack. Arrogant about it. Controlling it. Manipulating. When that person may be only capable of giving so much. I get to see me playing God when I write out step four. I get to see me playing God in every area of my life. My ambition, what I want, has that hurt, interfered, or threatened? Have an argument with the husband or wife. My ambition's hurt, interfered, or threatened. How? They're not doing what I want. I need them to be a certain way. Or I don't want to go home because I don't want to get involved in that. I don't want to be around that person. Ambitions hurt, interfered, or threatened. I had an argument with Joe at the Monday night meeting. He's a loudmouth, he's pompous, he's arrogant. Had a big blowout with him. He's in my first column, second column, the cause, right? My ambitions hurt, interfered, or threatened. You know why? I don't want to go back to that group anymore because he's there and I see how I gave him an awful lot of power. Who wants to look at that? All the manifestations of self in column four. That, for me, is the problem. Because I look at three and then I move over to column four and I get to see me on paper where I was selfish and self-seeking, the great expectations I put on people, my dishonesty and justified the dishonesty. And it goes on and on and on. All parts of self in the fourth column. If I was to ideally eliminate everything that showed up in column four, nothing in column three would be affected. I wouldn't be angry with the person in column one. I would be free. I get to see me in column four. And that's where it really hit the road for me. And that's why a book says we're prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. We get to see how the world and its people dominated us. If I have a resentment with someone in this room tonight, and I go to Mexico tomorrow, guess who's showing up in Mexico with me? Right? They're attached to my hip. Until I get past that, I get to see me playing God. But the fourth column for me was really rubber hitting the road. Because I had to disregard what you did entirely. Our book is clear on that. Disregard what you did entirely, even if you did something that was unkind to me. I had to disregard that entirely, not just a little bit, entirely, and put the mirror up to me and say, okay, where is my part? Nursing a resentment, character assassination, a lot of things we do to justify the behavior behind a resentment. See, this is spiritual life and spiritual death, and we need to go to some of the many, many lengths that show up in this work. And it isn't only spiritual life for me. It could be spiritual life for many, for countless others, because that awakened spirit, God will put people, me as a recovered alcoholic, people in my path to go work with, to go help. I'll be able to take, because of God, these principles into all my affairs, and that awakened spirit will touch the lives of others in a positive way. Spiritual life, not only for me, but for others. It's also spiritual death when I don't, and not only for me, but spiritual death for others, because it is very possible that God had a few people lined up for me to work with, and they won't get to work with me. And maybe beyond that, this, if you will, sick spirit, the person who's blocked, my spirit don't get sick, but if you can imagine me being blocked, taking that into all my affairs. And you know what that's about before we got in here. How we harmed others just by walking in a room. It's spiritual life or spiritual death for many. And God says, enough of that. Enough of spiritual, dying spiritual. We're going to wake you up. It's going to be drastic and revolutionary, but here's the work. And I'm going to give it all to you in order for you to experience all of me. So I write out this resentment inventory, and I was told to write out a fear inventory, and I got to see how I set the ball rolling. We back up for a second. It talks about our book asks us to disregard the other person involved entirely, even though they may have been at fault. And I always share this because eventually people come to me and share the same thing, that they had this and they were stuck. What do you do when you have something happen to you as a little boy or a young person, young girl, that was clearly inappropriate by an older member of your family or an extended relative, or should be locked up for what they do? Right? And you're the victim of that. And you walk around for years feeling dirty and pain and don't want to live it. And God forbid if anyone ever found out my manhood is threatened, or my, for a woman, maybe you feel your womanhood is threatened. It's a threat to who we be. Incredibly painful stuff. Show up to the fourth step, and my book tells me disregard what they did entirely. Where was I at fault? Are you kidding me? And I called up my sponsor, and I gave him a few choice words. I says, my book's asking me to do this, and here's the resentment about this person. I didn't do anything wrong. He says, no, you didn't. You're a young boy, totally a victim. So what do I put in my fourth column? And he asked me, well, how long have you been hating this man? I says, forever. And I'm bigger and strong and a lot more mature, and I would like to be alone with him this time and do things the John Wayne way. See, it works once in a while. And my sponsor said, that's where you're at fault. This is one of your many lengths right now. This is it. This is it for you. Stop hating him. Don't have to like him. Don't have to have a relationship with this person. Stop the hating, because it's killing you, regardless of what happens to this person. Rubber hit the road, trust me. There was a lot of prayer involved in here, and even some outside help. You know what? I got past it where I'm able to talk to you guys about it. And I don't hate the person. Don't like them. Don't hate them. Okay? Sex inventory, it was interesting. When I was reading my fifth step, most of this work was very clear letters. You could read it from a block away, resentment, Joe, he did this, and I stole money. And then inventory was little, on sex inventory, was little squibbly writing that no one could make out. Right? Because my sponsor asked me how much shame and guilt is attached to this stuff. And there was a ton of it my first time going through the work. But I wrote out a sex inventory. I listed principles and institutions, which I later found out were my belief systems and things like that. What's interesting about how this God proved himself to me once again, going through the work, I think it was the third time, a friend from California called and he says, jokingly, he says, with this cynical laugh, hey, how's that sex inventory going? And it was interesting. At that moment, I realized that my sex inventory had, and I don't give this lip service, nothing to do with sex, but all to do with belief systems about men and women. That was my inventory. And I realized, my Lord, God took me from the way I used to live and the things I was doing and behaving to now. Great stuff. I realized, again, it was shown to me, you're free of that. So we have all this work, and what do? Well, it's real easy to tuck it in the drawer, right? And wait for the right person to show up, and suddenly we say, well, a sponsor doesn't need to hear this. By the way, when I started to pray before I wrote inventory, I started to write inventory. And I didn't care what the place looked like, and I suddenly wasn't hungry, and I would write. And I had this little apartment with a bookshelf that I made into my own little desk because I really didn't have much. And I would sit by this window with a nightlight on with a cup of tea, because I don't drink coffee at night, but I was doing it then. And suddenly I got sanity of mind. Coffee is nuts at 11 o'clock at night, so let's have a cup of tea. And I would look out this window and I would see a little glimpse. I never forget this, a little glimpse of the Verrazano Bridge from Brooklyn, where I was living, the very first time going through to work. And this apartment, when I moved in, had a sleeping bag, no television, nothing. I had a few AA bumper stickers on a door and something that represented my higher power above the door. And this was Gracie Mansion for me, because I was taken from the scrap heap to a level of life better than the best I've ever known. And little by slowly, I start to fix it up. And I remember looking out and seeing a little glimpse of the Verrazano Bridge, and it was very still. Very still. And I would write, and I would write, and I would write, and I would write, and I would write. And I finally get done, and I was told to give prayer of thanks, close the book, and leave that where it is, and go about my day. And I'd go to sleep and wake up the next morning, come home and write some more. And my sponsor told me some great information because I was making a meeting all the time. He says, staying home to write inventory tonight won't get you drunk. You don't need to hit all these meetings. Stay home and write inventory because that's what's going to get you free. The meetings aren't keeping you sober. God's keeping you sober, and you need to experience that power which has been keeping you sober all along. I heard him, and I'd write. And I got done. And I had to show up to his doorstep with the fifth step the first time. As I've had over the course of going through this work, I do personal persons. I sit with more than one person. The more people know about me who are on this path, the freer I get. But the first time I went through the work was with one man, my first sponsor. On page 72... it says, having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? We're trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and to discover the obstacles in our path. We have admitted certain defects, have ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is, put our finger on the weak items in our personal inventory. These are about to be cast out. We're not going to deal with them. We're not going to work on them. We're not going to embrace them. They're going to be cast out like garbage. We don't leave the garbage in the living room and analyze it and see what happens in a couple of months. Right? Cast out. They're gone, and God's going to do it for us. Because when I don't, on the bottom of this page, it says, if we skip this vital step, life-giving when I do and life-threatening when I don't, we may not overcome drinking. And it takes me, this book at this point, takes me right back to why I'm here, step one. Time after time, newcomers have tried to keep to themselves certain facts about their lives, and we try to avoid this humbling experience. Well, currently, am I trying to keep things to myself that no one's going to find out about, but they should know about? The sins of omission? Am I writing like inventory at night and sharing this, but not this, because you may think less of me? Because my ego has now taken over? Right. On the bottom of page 73, it says, I must be entirely honest with somebody if I expect to live long, and that's up to God how long I'm going to live, but I can live free and happy and experience what I said earlier, that inner peace by experiencing God. And so I remember going to my sponsor's house, and suddenly I didn't want to go there. He doesn't need to know all of this. My sponsor went from walking on water to this guy in AA, and you don't tell anyone the secrets. You don't do that. John Wayne was showing up again. Or where I come from was Al Pacino was showing up again. And I remember feeling uneasy in here. And I hit my knees, and I prayed. Father, please just get me to this man's doorstep. And he invited me up, and I began. We made prayer, and we began. And he treated my work and me with dignity and love and patience. And he looked bored a lot, too. And I remember that when I hear fifth steps. I think the first week I was in, I talked about getting down there and experiencing that compassion for another drunk, getting to where they are, knowing what it's like to give away a fourth step. Because the house cleaning, by the way, step five is part of my house cleaning. My house cleaning isn't complete until I do my fifth step. And I know this is part of the process for that new prospect, and I need to be there with them and understand what they're experiencing. That when it comes to sex inventory, they'd rather go home. When it comes to some of the things we've done, they'd rather not share about it. It's uncomfortable. It's a force feeding of humility, and it's wonderful for us. One of my teachers has said, and a lot of us have heard him say this, if it feels good, it doesn't mean it's good. And if it feels bad, it doesn't mean it's bad. Doing this work doesn't always feel good. It feels painful. It's uncomfortable. For me, I felt even in all of that, someone knows. Finally, and they didn't ask me to leave. And so when I hear fifth steps, I embrace what the person's doing. And God allows me to listen the way He allows me to listen. Anyone who's ever sat with the fifth step with me, I have a notepad and a pen. I make prayer. We go silent. I'll read some of this work, and then they begin. And I'll start to take notes, and it's not me taking notes. It's Spirit moving me. Pay attention to this. It keeps showing up again. Pay attention to that. And they are told to disregard what I'm doing entirely. And then we'll talk, and I'll ask questions, and I'll share. I'll ante up for them, and I'll listen. I'll listen to what the prospect is not saying. I'll watch them as they share. And I'll help them get clearer on some of the stuff they're giving me. This is the great power God gives us. We're not based on my track record. I'm not supposed to be hearing someone's fifth step. Because I, in the old days, would use it against you one way or the other. But it's sacred with me now. And anyone who's ever worked with me knows that. And so we sit. And I teach. And that's what I ask God for. Let me be an instrument. Show me how to help. And the first time I got done, it was a few times sitting down with my sponsor to go through this work. And I went through all the resentment inventory. I went all through the fear inventory, the sex, all of it. And that person in my life who caused a great deal of pain to me, I remember cringing a little bit in sharing this because I said, this man's going to think of me as less than a man now. And Spirit spit it out. Had me deliver this. And you know what this guy told me? He shared a similar experience that happened to him. And I knew I wasn't alone. Because I looked at this man as a strong person. But something in here that was strong. And was living this book. And talked about God and God's love and God's love. That's what attracted me to this man. And the same thing happened to him. And how he got past that. And he shared that with me freely. And I knew, I could feel there was something other than he and I in that room. And it was God. The sacredness of that moment. You want to see God working, watch one drunk work with another. That's what we do. Whether it's in the fifth step or after this meeting or after home group, we work, we work, we work. Page 75. It says, when we decide who's to hear our story, we waste no time. We have a written inventory and prepared for a long talk. We explain to our partner what we're about to do and why we have to do it. He should realize or she should realize we're engaged upon a life and death errand. Most people approached this way will be glad to help. They will be honored by our confidence. We pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. And that's where the split in the fifth step is. That's the end of the first half of the fifth step because now we talk. Now we begin the work and we start going through the fifth step as long as it takes. And when we get done, we have these fifth step promises, which I will tell you may not materialize like it did for me right after the fifth step. It may, but somewhere it happened for me. And it was somewhere between 6, 7, 8, 9 where I felt like the expression I can come to is the fist of Gulliver went down into my chest and ripped out the last of the poison. Because there was something going on that I never experienced like this before. I had moments along the way, but this one particular time, something was incredibly different, and I couldn't even describe it, but I remember calling my sponsor and saying, here's what's going on. The same way with my current sponsor, Mark, when I've gone through this work every time, especially the very first time going through with him, I couldn't explain what was happening to me. That was back in step three. Something was happening that words fell short. But it was an experience nonetheless. Our fifth step promises. Once we have taken this step withholding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. Where we may have had certain spiritual beliefs, we may begin to have a spiritual experience. And it may be like it was for me, the infancy of one, but one nonetheless, it's happening. And trust me, others can see it a lot clearer than we can. We will just wake up to it. As would happen to me a little bit further down. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we are on the broad highway walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. Incredible stuff. It tells us what to do when we get home. We get quiet for an hour. Nowhere in my book does it say, you did good, now hang out a little while. Our book uses words like next, launched, vigorous, continued, now. Right? All action words. In step five, they say we return home and get quiet for an hour. And in that quiet, I review the first five proposals. See if I've omitted anything. Have I tried to sneak something through the archway? Have I tried to sneak something in my delusional thinking that God won't know about? God won't find this out. There's questions I sit with to review. Have I omitted anything? Do I believe I'm powerless over alcohol and my life's unmanageable? Do I believe I have no power, choice, and control before the first drink and after the first drink? Do I believe I cannot manage my own life? Do I believe my mind will take me back to a drink or anything that is going to kill me? Do I believe that my body is just quite as abnormal as my mind? And that my body will experience the phenomenon of craving if I pick up a drink again? Do I believe I can experience strange mental blank spots in Alcoholics Anonymous sober? Do I believe I'll experience a strange mental blank spot without living in the sunlight of the Spirit? Am I still willing to accept spiritual help? And if not, know while I will experience the bitter end. Am I willing to have God restore me to sanity still? Or have I kind of done enough work after step five and get attached to feeling good? I got it. I'm in control again. Do I believe God can and will relieve me of my alcoholism? Am I willing to believe in and do live on terms other than my own? Am I still convinced that my life run on self-will can hardly be a success? Am I willing to quit playing God in every area of my life? So some questions that I go through. Where do I stand? And there's no right or wrong. Just let's just see. Maybe we need to write more inventory. And when I'm done, we get to step six. They ask us some questions on the bottom of page 75. Am I building this archway the way God wants me to build it, or am I building my own archway? Have I tried to, sneak something through the archway? Are all the stones properly in place? And I answer these questions. And on the top of page 76, there's something neat here. It says, if I can answer to my own satisfaction, not the sponsor's satisfaction, not the home group, but to mine, which my book implies I've had a shift in consciousness in here. Something's changing where I can sit back and say, yeah, I can answer to my own satisfaction. So I suit up and show up, and I will tell you that this work, going through it over and over again, has evolved in 6 and 7, but has really turned into, as someone has sat with me and shown me and taught me, it has become 6 and 7 each time my first light, my first step for my life. Because I'm left with the stuff that's still blocking me from God. And am I willing to have God remove all of these things, what's ever left? Or am I still clinging to something for fear of how I'll be without it? How many of these defects were fueled by fear? Am I using my mind to determine what I'm going to be when those defects are finally removed, because they're going to get removed? My sponsor had me write the defects that I was made aware of, and on the other side of the page, the opposite of those defects, and turn back to this power. Dishonest, honest, self-seeking, giving, hateful, loving. And it was just a humble offering to this power, never demanding, you give me this, but Father, this is what was revealed to me, and I offer this. And if you want to rebuild me this way, this is what was revealed to me. God's going to do what he needs to do anyway. You know, sometimes we think maybe arrogance is not good. It's killing us. And we go to God and we're still a little bit arrogant, and we fail to realize some of that arrogance helps people. They pay attention when we're working with those type of prospects. We don't know. So we suit up and show up with a spirit of willingness in six. A doctor will do the surgery, God will do the healing. A farmer does the planting and God does the growing. We suit up and show up with a spirit of willingness, and God will do the rebuilding and the recreating as He would have us be. Am I willing? Yes or no? Circumstances in my first step have still allowed me to seek this power with the desperation for drowning man, to continually revisit this work, continually turn back to this God with all the falling short I do, and share with other alcoholics. That's all I got. Thanks. Questions? Anyone? Somebody's going to ask, have you guys thought about getting an air conditioner? Okay, I guess we'll wrap up. Thank you.